Welcome in the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. Great to have you with us alongside Chris Dortch, the Hall of Famer. I'm Kevin Ingram. Coming up on today's show, we'll get into what's going on in the quote-unquote offseason for college hoops, which includes lots of portal activity, new coaches in new places. We'll look ahead to the summer as well, and we'll talk about something special for Chris, a part of his career and his journey that is actually wrapping up very soon, but it's been really cool to hear about and sometimes to be a part of. Chris, what's going on, man?
Well, you know, just trying to keep track of the crazy season. The coaching carousel has slowed down. I think somebody shut that one off, but the portal is gone bananas. And what's crazy is that you'll see kids who initially said they were going to stay, and then their team acquires somebody out of the portal. I'm talking about Ohio State, for example. They get Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky, and then they lose this kid, Felix Akpara. He's a big center who immediately gets into the portal. He doesn't want any of this Twin Tower stuff. He wants to go somewhere where he's the man. So that happens. That's happening everywhere. I talked to an SEC coach about it, and he said, you really have to be careful to preserve the core guys in your program. So you can't really overdo the portal, but yet, you know, if a bunch of guys leave your program through the portal, you've got to get your numbers back up. That he talked about having enough guys to have a decent practice, you know? So yeah, it's a slippery slope. It really is. I mean, you just, more and more schools are going to, at least the bigger schools, are hiring a position like the NBA, director of player personnel.
Right.
And it's literally a guy that does nothing but, you know, let's figure out this roster here and what do we need and what's leaving and what's coming. And NIL agents have gotten into it. A lot of good ones. Some people that are making a couple of spare shekels dropping down from the NBA, but there's some unscrupulous ones who are guiding their players, not just in the portal, but I mean, in NIL, but making portal decisions and maybe decisions to try to go pro and they're not ready. It's just disruptive. So it's tough to keep track of. And meanwhile, while I'm doing that, I'm already, and this is nuts, we're just 2 weeks removed from the national title game. I've already handed out just about all my assignments for Blue Ribbon, and it's nuts. You're going to be joining the crew, which I'm glad of, in a bigger capacity, but it's nuts to with all these schools that are changing leagues. And the other thing, we're going to start finally running every school that's in their transition phase. We hadn't done that before because the NCAA would not allow them to play in the NCAA or the NIT, didn't even count their stats. But I have been convinced to add them, and along with that, 16 pages to the book. So we're going to go hog wild.
Well, that's adding some more teams to the mix. And I always think those things are a little bit unfair for teams. I think it was Bellarmine a couple years ago where they had great season and they actually won the league, and they would have been in the tournament. They would have been the conference champions in the Atlantic Sun, but they couldn't because they were in a transitional period. And that's not the first time something like that has happened.
Yeah, Merrimack did that a couple of years before. And it's nuts. I did adopt a policy, sort of a battlefield promotion. If you won your league or your league tournament as a transition team, I went ahead and put you in. But that just caused more confusion for some of our longtime readers and really some new readers. You know, they were like, why isn't Southern Indiana in the book?
Right, right.
And now I don't have to explain that anymore. They'll be in there.
See, what you should have done is, you know, when those teams won and they would have been in the book the next year, you needed to have like one of those brackets or something where they could put their name on there, like, you know, Blue Ribbon,
yeah,
we're in.
Stamp it in, that's right.
T-shirts and ball caps and all that stuff. It's like, you may not
There'll
get to go to the tournament,
now, man,
but you're in Blue Ribbon.
Ceremony.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm hearing coaches say that April has become the most stressful month of the year, just for some of the things that you described. We're looking at the portal. It's wide open for business. And you talk about coaches just trying to put together rosters and keep players they want to stay. There's so much player movement. We're talking, you know, 1,000 names in the portal or whatever it is. It's way beyond that. So far, which players that have either left a place or landed in a new place have stood out to you?
Well, Omar Ballo left Arizona, and I'm not sure why, because he had been with Tommy from his days when he was still an assistant to Mark Few at Gonzaga, didn't play much there, went to Arizona, didn't play much his first year, and then really became a star. And I'm really surprised that he left there, but he went to Indiana, and that was a big get. A lot of people think he's maybe the best transfer in the portal. I've seen a bunch of these portal rankings, and they're all over the map. It's just really hard to rate, I think. It was cool to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robbie Avila, follow his coach Josh Scherse from Indiana State to St. Louis. That was pretty cool. And then you look at what Dusty May has done at Michigan, where he, didn't inherit a lot. He got 6 commitments in 72 hours.
Wow.
Including Yale transfer Danny Wolf, North Texas transfer Reuben Jones, Auburn transfer Trey Donaldson, Ohio State transfer Roddy Gale Jr., and Alabama transfer Sam Walters. And thinking of Alabama reminded me that Auburn's point guard transferred to Alabama. So, it went nuts on social media, and he's going to get a chance to play a lot there. He didn't shoot the ball. He started out shooting the ball well at Auburn, didn't finish that way, and he'll get a chance to crank it up at Alabama for sure.
Yeah, some of those moves are really interesting when you go from one rival school to another, and not just another team in your conference, but a team that's the arch rival, and I'm sure the student section will be quite pleased when they see you step on their court the next year. But that's just the way it is now. I mean, there's so much movement. And you know, one thing you mentioned, Ballo going to Indiana, they're having a pretty good little season here in the portal when you look at some of the additions the Hoosiers have made. Not just him, but 3 of the top 11, I'm looking at the ESPN rankings, Kanan Carlisle from Stanford, also Miles Rice, who've been at Washington State. So they've added some pretty nice players so far. Jeremy Roach was one of the main guys leaving Duke, which surprised me a little bit. Some of these situations, are you going to find a better situation than what you already have? He's committed to Baylor. And there'll be lots more here in the coming weeks when players start to make their decisions and land at different places. But I mean, it's insane. It really is. I mean, there's so many players going so many different places.
We're in a strange new world when Duke loses 7 players in the portal. And I'm talking about 2 starters. Jeremy Roach went to Baylor. Mark Mitchell went to Mizzou. But they've started to reload. They took Syracuse transfer Malik Brown, a big who averaged almost 10 and a little over 7 boards over his final 5 games. And then they got Mason Gillis, who we saw play for Purdue with their national runner-up team. So I think he was a 47% three shooter. So, Duke is having to not just, and Kentucky found this out too, you can't just rely on one and done freshmen anymore. You have to be old. And the way to do that is to get transfers. And it really, it places a premium on talent evaluation and fit. You have to decide whether a player has the skills that you're looking for and whether he fits your culture. I'll just pull out a name, Tennessee. If you go there, you must be a gym rat and you must be willing to play on the defensive end. So the one signee they've gotten so far, Darlon Stone-Dubar, is a shooter, but he's also inclined to play defense. And then this kid I mentioned earlier, Felix Oxpara, the Ohio State big man, I would not be surprised if he ends up at Tennessee. He's a big-time defender, finished 2nd in the Big Ten in blocks, and just a raw but aggressive and physical and intimidating big man. So and he likes to work hard. He likes to play defense. So those are needs and fit. And it's really, I don't know which one's more important. The fit part definitely is major, because if you have a disruptive force in your culture, that's like a cancer that spreads through your program and it can ruin everything. So this is a crazy, the cliche of blue ribbon, the all-time cliche from coaches used to be, well, there was two. He can score at all three levels, that, and he's a Swiss Army knife, connoting, you know, versatility. Now the cliche is speed dating. And it's literally, it used to go from, you had 2 years to make, build a relationship with a high school kid. Now you got 2 weeks, if that. I mean, this kid I'm talking about from Akpara from Ohio State, he announced on a Saturday he was leaving. By Tuesday, he was visiting at Tennessee, which, by the way, had recruited him as a high school player. And he even played at least 1 year of his high school experience in Chattanooga at Hamilton Heights, which has become a power. Right. They recruit worldwide. I have a kid from Hamilton Heights that actually lives with a foster family in my neighborhood. So they come from all over. And but yeah, it's just the movement is mind-boggling. If you don't look, I mean, Indiana State almost won the NIT, and then their coach leaves, and now two of their players are at Texas. Another one followed Schertz to St. Louis, and there's a couple more out there. One of them committed to Xavier. So that program is torn asunder.
Yep. Where I work at Vanderbilt, and I'm not going to mention any names as far as players, because there's probably rules about that, and I don't want to even go anywhere close to that. But it feels like Greg Byington's done a really good job in reloading the roster. So as that becomes more official, we'll talk a little more about it. I tell you a name that I've seen in the portal that surprised me, and it's a team that Vanderbilt played season before last. Aiden Mahaney, who had been at St. Mary's, he's played two seasons there. That was, by all accounts, that was his dream school. And he averaged about 14 points a game in each of his 2 years. And he was all conference in the West Coast Conference. And that guy's a very good player. That's one that surprised me, leaving a place where he had wanted to be. And wherever he lands, that team's going to get a really nice guard. So maybe a name to keep an eye on.
It's funny you mentioned him yesterday. One of my former students who works for the San Jose Mercury News called me to get my impressions on St. Mary's, because in addition to him, they lost another guy in the portal. They used to be bulletproof from the portal, and they lost their top recruit too. That kid lives just 2 minutes from St. Mary's campus, and it was a shocker. My student asked me, did I think, you know, St. Mary's might tumble a little bit, and I think they're still one of those programs that'll be okay. They developed a niche a long time ago to recruit kids from Australia and New Zealand. And if you look at their rosters over the last decade or more, they've been packed with those kids. And, you know, they don't know St. Mary's from St. John's. They just want to come and play basketball. And St. Mary's is a good program. As I told my student, they've transcended the mid-major tag, as has Gonzaga in that league, the West Coast Conference, which everybody would call a mid-major, except for those two. But yeah, that one really surprised me. I just couldn't believe it. But I think St. Mary's will be okay.
Well, since our last show, Kentucky has hired Mark Pope as head coach. And we were wondering when we did our previous show, because it was right after Calipari had left for Arkansas, and you wondered, okay, who's going to be next for Kentucky? I mean, we were talking about all sorts of different names, including Scott Drew maybe making the journey from Baylor to Lexington and being the head coach. That didn't happen. So it turns out that it's Mark Pope, who had been at BYU and done a really good job there. And it's the return to Lexington by a guy who was a key player on Kentucky's greatest team, the 1996 champions, when Rick Pitino was coach, and they had nine guys off that team that played in the NBA. The celebration for Mark Pope at a packed rep arena was something you're not going to see anywhere else in college basketball.
No.
But now you get to the hard part for Pope in that program. Now, he's put together a good staff just in recent days. He's added Mark Fox, who's a veteran coach. Also, reports of Baylor's Alvin Brooks joining their staff. Yeah. And is now basically working on building a roster from scratch. Reed Sheppard, I know they had hoped he might stay, but if you're going to be a lottery pick, you probably got to go. But how tough of a job is that for Mark Pope in today's college basketball and today's college athletics, for that matter, at a place with tons of tradition, you know, the 8 championships and 2,000 wins and all the All-Americans and just everything that goes into that job and a fan base that's extremely demanding. And one of the things that Pope said in his opening comments is that he understands what the mission is here, and that's to put championship banners up in the rafters. And you talk about winning a press conference. He could not have won the press conference. It was like, you know, Kentucky playing LSU in 1996. I mean, he won the press conference like that, where it was 86-42 at halftime. But what's it a job like for him, especially the way things are done in today's college basketball?
Well, it was funny. The Twitter critics immediately lit into him. And what they failed to forget is that by that time, Jay Wright, Danny Hurley, Billy Donovan, Scott Drew, and Nate Oates had already said no. You know, they've got great positions where they're at. In the case of Nate Oates, I don't think he wanted to fork out an $18 million buyout of his contract. Kentucky's got loads of money, but they don't have that much. To pay $18 million for a guy to come, plus his salary. So the fans weren't thinking rationally. But once Mark Pope got hired and they had that unbelievable, I heard it was 16,000. They had closed off sections of Rupp, but there were 16,000 strong. They pulled the bus up there. I think it was in similar fashion to that 96 team.
It was like they pulled
and
the
all
bus.
Those players, filed out, and Pope was last, and he had the trophy.
Yeah, like just like they did in 96 when they won the championship. They pulled the bus in there then. And I remember talking to Tony Delka about that when I actually did a story for Blue Ribbon a few years ago. And about that whole scene when they rode from the airport to Rupp Arena and pulled in there on the bus. And he said it was just crazy. And then he was one of the guys that they got off the bus again with Pope. But sorry, Chris, a little sidetrack there, but go ahead.
No, I'm glad you had that aside. But you know, it turns out that the Twitter critics, they're a vocal minority. And there's nothing worse with somebody, let's say, that doesn't know what they're talking about, but yet espouses an opinion. And we saw with that packed house that the Kentucky faithful are going to welcome back one of their own. I don't think they could have made a better hire given what had already gone down. I mean, they lost a chance to get somebody like, say, Dusty May. They lost a chance to get somebody like Darian DeVries, who went from Drake to West Virginia. Louisville hired Pat Kelsey. I think that was a great hire. So they had to do something. Mark Pope's made some good moves. I think Mark Fox had hired him at Georgia, so he's returning the favor. Mark was a successful head coach for a bit. His last couple of stops weren't that successful, but he's still a good coach and a good man, does things the right way. He once told me he'd rather flip burgers than have to cheat. And this was pre-NIL days, and he meant it. And Alvin Brooks, you know, veteran recruiter, has kept Baylor's cupboards stocked. So it's going to be tough. Somebody wrote, and I couldn't resist. I try not to do this, but they introduced a kid that Pope signed, and he was going to BYU. And the guy said, oh, it's great that Kentucky now gets all of BYU's recruits. And I couldn't resist saying, you know what? Why don't you give the guy a chance to get players that he's already identified that can run his system? And furthermore, how was that five-star one-and-done thing working for Cal? You know, not so good in recent years. So why don't you just sit back, let a guy who's had demonstrative success at two former head coaching stops, do his thing, who loves Kentucky like nobody else. You could cut him and he would bleed blue. And is, like you said, has built a good staff. I think it was a great hire, especially, I mean, shoot, Vanderbilt made a great hire. And this was after a bunch of good coaches had already been spoken for. Mark Byington is going to do a great job. You can't mention it. I can say this. He's already signed six guys out of the portal. I'm not going to name names for your sake. I want you to keep your job. But I will say this. They were all carefully selected. He followed that Wooden. I love that great Wooden quote, and I say it to my students all the time. Be quick, but don't hurry. So, I heard him interviewed on a podcast. He cannot sleep past 5 a.m., and he's getting after it. So they've already signed six transfers, and I've looked them up. Sports Reference, we had their CEO on our show once. That is one of my favorite websites. Everybody, you need to, if you love ball, go to Sports Reference. They've got some great new search tools. You may have to pay for them, but they're worth it. But I looked up every one of them. They are either great shooters or they're high basketball IQ guys. He's done a masterful job, and he's not done yet, of restocking his roster sort of in his image. And I think that's what Mark Pope could do. I could not resist jabbing at that guy. Why don't you let him sign guys that he knows fits his system? And his system is great. They're going to run. They're going to spread the floor. It's going to be an exciting brand of basketball. He's right up there, cutting edge of how the game is played now.
I will say I've seen, and I don't know how Mark Pope will do at Kentucky. I actually think he'll do well. Once I thought it through, I was looking at all this crazy reaction when it was first starting to get out there that he was going to be the guy for that program. I'm like, I've seen his teams play in person the last couple seasons because just this past year, they were in the same tournament we were in Las Vegas. I saw BYU there. And I also saw him in Hawaii. We actually played against BYU a couple seasons back out there when Pope was obviously coach at BYU that season as well. And the one thing that stood out was, like, they play an exciting style. They shoot threes. They get up and down. So, I mean, that feels like something that would be exciting to watch as he takes that and transfers it to Kentucky and probably gets even better talent there. So, yeah, I'm like you. Just give the guy a chance and give the players a chance and see how it all works out. If you're talking about Coach Byington getting up early, maybe he and I can go have breakfast because I can't hardly sleep past 5 o'clock either. So maybe Coach B and I can meet up. After all the years of doing mornings, I just don't sleep very well. I wake up super early still. I don't wake up as early as I used to. But
that's a tough habit to break. Yeah, when did you get up when you were doing the morning show?
I would usually get up somewhere in the 3:15 range. And I would try to be to work at about 4:30. We'd go on the air at 6 o'clock. So I'd get there early.
You wrote the copy, right?
Yeah. I'd write the updates and edit sound and all those things and then do prep for the show, the different segments we were going to do. And I'd do some of it.
It didn't matter if it was snowy or icy. Kevin had to be there.
Right. And I drove through some interesting weather at times to get there super early and even drove through a tornado damage a few years ago. That was one of the strangest mornings driving to work. Because everything was dark because all the power had been knocked out and it was just really, really strange. But as far as coaches and giving them a chance, I feel like a lot of places have made hires that make a lot of sense. There have been so many coaching changes. I'm really excited about Mark Byington at Vanderbilt. When you look up in the state of Kentucky, I don't think it's ever happened that Kentucky, Louisville, Western have all made coaching changes and new hires in the same year. Morehead State also had to replace their coach, too, after he actually went to James Madison. Preston Spradlin, who did a great job at Morehead. But it's really crazy to me just what all has gone on in these last couple months and really just the last few weeks in terms of coaches. I wanted to bring up something I saw about SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and what he said about a possible Super League in college sports, which to me is more about football than anything else. But he kind of shot down that talk. I think he was at some meetings in Dallas or somewhere in Texas this week. I wonder if anything like that ever actually happens, and would we just be talking about being football with the other sports remaining the same? And also something, Chris, you uncovered, and I had stumbled across this too, talk of changing the format for the NCAA tournament and starting the thing on the weekend. I'm like, why in the world would we do something like that when you got Thursday and Friday, which are basically perfect to sit around on the couch and watch basketball from 11 a.m. until midnight? Who came up with a bright idea to do something like that? So, you talk about an immediate eye roll for me. That's what that plan got.
I think it was so universally reviled that it quickly got shelved. You can't even Google it and find it. It's almost like, let's sweep this thing under the rug. Let's get an expert to sweep the internet. But I couldn't resist playing off the old, remember the movie Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah.
So there's the three proposals, and I wrote three tweets. You know how they go /1, because I'm not going to pay for 140 more than 140 characters. I'm sorry. So I did 1 of 1, open men's tournament on Saturday, Sunday, instead of Thursday, Friday. I said, dumb, because that means you have to finish on Mondays and Tuesdays. And those are weekdays too, the last I checked. Using home arenas for both tournaments, men's and women's, the first weekend. Dumber. There goes the chance for the best thing about this tournament. David versus Goliath upsets because Goliath still has the home court advantage, which is true in the women's game. You know, the best teams host. All right. And then hold men's and women's Final Fours in the same city. My reaction, dumbest. Both men and women deserve their own spotlight in their own city. Plus, there'd be a ton of chambers of commerce that would be really bummed if they couldn't have a crack at either the men's or the women's, because millions are spent in those cities. And besides, the women's game has grown to the point where it deserves its own place in the sun, and it gets it with ESPN. And you know, it's played on Fridays and Sundays and has its own time and its own city. So those were three of the dumbest things. It was a committee, I'm told, made up of former NBA. There's your first mistake. And ESPN. There's your second mistake. Personnel. I say former. If they were still with them, you know, maybe that would connote they had more value. So maybe you shouldn't be making statements like this. You cannot gut this tournament. I might be in favor of adding a few teams, but I know a lot of people that are vehemently against that too. And talking to our buddy Joe Lenardi, it's tough when you get down to those last spots to find deserving teams.
Sure.
So I know a lot of people they're already worried about, you know, well, these super conferences, some good power conference teams are going to get rooked. And I talked to Mike DeCourcy about this. He's not in favor of expansion because he thinks they'll all be given to power conference teams. Now, I would be in favor of maybe getting it up, whatever Joe said, 72, if they were evenly divided between the deserving power conference teams that might get left out, but also deserving teams like, say, an Indiana State. You know, they just didn't have a great quad one record, but everybody thought they belonged. And
yeah, they were clearly one of the 68 best teams, or, you know, however many teams you want to include as far as that large bid.
You got to use the eye test right at some point. I've had many friends over the years that were in that room that were on the committee, and they told me that the last thing that is asked is, and if they weren't a coach already, if you were a coach, who would you least like to play? And that is a human element that no advanced metrics or polls or computers can ever replace. And I think in terms of that, they let Indiana State down. I really do. And they proved it in the NIT I'm glad they had their spotlight for a while. You know, it's over now. A lot of people think Josh Schertz made a lateral move to St. Louis in the A-10. I disagree. A-10 didn't have its best year this year, maybe the last couple, but it's a multi-bid league and the Valley is not. So anytime you can move to a multi-bid league in a major city like St. Louis, you got to do it.
Couple quick thoughts before we wrap up our show today. The National Player of the Year, Zach Edey, has officially entered the NBA draft. That's not a big shock. We actually saw his final game with Purdue in the NCAA championship against UConn a couple weeks ago.
37 points.
Right. It could be a while, Chris, before we see another player who's like him. A guy his size with his skills and just to basically controls a lot of the games that we saw him play like Edey did for the Boilermakers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say he's a unicorn, but in today's world where even five men are expected to shoot it, he definitely was a rarity in the fact that he didn't leave the paint. Some people said he didn't leave it for
he definitely did not leave the paint.
I read an article where he said a bunch of things. You know, people said, well, the refs protected him. He didn't get called for fouls. That's not necessarily the case. He was coached not to be overly aggressive shot blocking. And with a 9-foot whatever reach, standing reach, you don't have to be. But they needed him on the floor. So he didn't foul a lot. He didn't get caught out on switches where a quicker guard might make him have to foul. He was smart. All right. He also says, I'm a better passer than people have given me credit for. He didn't pass out of a lot of double teams because, again, they needed him to score. Those 37 we saw him put up, most in the final since Goose Givens in 1978, Kentucky versus Duke. So he scored 40 in the Elite Eight against Tennessee. They needed him to score the ball. And, you know, good luck trying to stop it. So who wouldn't take advantage of a guy like that? What's amazing is his stock has risen to where a lot of people thought he might be a late second rounder, and now he's moved into the first round. So I'm happy for him for that, if that's true. And I think he needs to go ahead and show he thinks he can shoot it better than people give him credit for. He thinks he can pass it better than people give him credit for. He thinks he can switch on screen and rolls better than people give him credit for. Let's see. You know, he was tasked with certain things at Purdue, and Matt Painter loves to use his big men, and who wouldn't toss it into that cat? You know, if he didn't get a touch on the first possession of every first pass of every possession, I'm running somebody off. You know, that guy's got to get the ball. And I think when they got upset in a couple of early round ousters in the previous 2 years, their guards forgot that mantra. Get that cat a touch, you know, get him a touch. And that's not what happened against Fairleigh Dickinson.
All right, Chris, as we finish up our show today, you know, we talked about Zach Edey and him being a dominant player. Chris has been a dominant force in the classroom over at Tennessee Chattanooga the last few years, teaching sports writing and really teaching way more than that. But that part of your career and that kind of that season of your career is wrapping up. And one of the neat things, having been around you and being around some of your students and each even, you know, stepping in there and speaking to your class a few times, was just how much the students love you and care about you and how much you've meant to them and helped them and mentored them in all different ways, not just sports writing, but understanding what it takes to be successful in a career, whatever that path might be for those students who and a lot have gone on to graduate and either have sports writing careers or move into other fields. But I just wanted to tell you congratulations on the great job you did. I know everybody over at UTC is probably sad to see you go, but you've done a fantastic job there, and you've influenced a lot of young lives, and so much for the better. So congrats, man. That's really cool, and I'm happy for you being able to step away here on your own terms.
Well, nice of you to say. I told a PhD wrote me the other day and said, we were better for having you. And I said, well, thanks, but I wanted to go out like Dean Smith and John Wooden, you know, maybe at the height of my powers. But, you know, I was always, I always thought I was there to help students succeed, not fail. So I wasn't the hardest grader, but I was a taskmaster. I made them write a lot. The other day, I was talking to one of my students, and I said, yeah, they were trying to bust out their final, which was 3,000 words. And I said, man, I know I made you guys write a lot, but he said, we're the better for it. And I can't tell you how many students have told me, especially this year when I had a second class, narrative nonfiction, that allowed students to take me all year. I had a handful of students who took sports writing, then next semester narrative nonfiction. And several of them have said, you have changed my life. And I always say, thank you. Good of you to say, appreciate you saying it. And I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but I got into this gig because I want to be in the business of changing lives. If you're not in it to change lives, why are you teaching? And so that was always my deal. And the irony of my teaching career is that the more I got into it and the more I studied the masters of my profession along with my students, the more it whet my appetite for getting back to how I started, and that is as a storyteller. So, you know, I'm already talking about some book projects and things like that. And I just figured it was time to maybe, I'm a better writer now than I was at my peak because of being able to teach those kids the methods of the masters. So I just felt like I needed to go out on top and I need to, I've still got that itch I got to scratch. So that's kind of it in a probably longer answer than you wanted.
Book projects are always kind of short and easy, and you just knock them out and get the book out there.
Oh, so I said I'd never do it again.
that won't take you long.
Here I am juggling maybe three. You know, a lot of stuff has to break for those to happen. But, you know, I'm talking about them. And I just, you know, I wasn't born with the fiction gene as a writer. I was born with a nonfiction gene. But I use fiction techniques to tell nonfiction stories, and that's how I teach. And I'll be dang if that didn't help. That system worked. Every one of my students, every year, if they just tried, got better as writers. I mean, they had to. I mean, I wasn't a tough grader, but I was a tough editor.
Yeah.
And I pointed out things and I repeated mantras and I said stuff like, there's no rule that your job has to suck, and you know, mine has been a permanent vacation and you should reach for the stars, all those kind of cliches. But I meant it. And I meant well for them. So I'll miss that part of it. I've got one more project I'm working on. I've got a student that wants to go to grad school. I received a call that stunned me the other day. It's never happened. Somebody at that school already wants to hire this student, and she hasn't even applied yet as a GA. Wow. To write for their magazine and do video things, projects, and all of which she can do. And I was just blown away by it. So I didn't text or email her, which she's actually slow, but she's so busy responding to. I picked up the phone and called her. And she was blown out by that. And all of a sudden now it makes her have to make a life decision. What do I do? I was planning on this. I've got a lease here. I've got a contract at a TV station. And it's like, I'm not telling you what to do, but you told me what your dream was, and I tried to help you get there. So do with that what you will. You know, the mantra was the same. And I'm proud, and I'm proud for her. And she's a great writer and turns a phrase. She's from Nashville, went to Father Ryan. I'm hopeful she'll do what I want her to. But as I always tell them, my opinion is only offered, free advice is as good as what you pay for. But a lot of them do. I mean, a lot of them, you know, they look at what I've done and the things that, you know, that I've been lucky enough to be awarded in the last couple of years. And, you know, there's credibility there. So I will miss my relationship with those kids. There's no doubt.
Well, again, congrats. You've done an amazing job and always do a great job with our podcast. And of course, the Blue Ribbon Yearbook, which production will be coming very soon on that as well. Chris, yeah. We'll talk to you next time. We'll keep track of what's going on in the portal and all the other moves in this offseason for college basketball. But always great to do the podcast with you.
Thanks, man. We'll do our best.
He's Chris. I'm Kevin. That is the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. And we'll talk to you next time.